For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Talking about digging for your authentic self, navigating the obstacles. In the last session, we talked about how all kinds of things can pull us in the wrong direction. And we looked at how these obstacles are like knots because they tie us up and they obstruct our freedom. And the obstacles were desire and craving, aversion, which you might think of as anger or frustration or irritation, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, or doubt. And what I've found is that regardless of the obstacle, the steps to navigate around it or through it really are to recognize it, to acknowledge it, and to understand it. And it sounds a lot like rain. It really actually is the first three steps of rain. There's lots of different ways out there that you can deal with obstacles. But I think these three are the key. Recognize it, acknowledge it, and then understand it. So knowing intellectually what the obstacles are is only the first step really in recognizing it. It's really easy to see them when they're full blown. When you're really angry at someone, you know you're angry. But by that time, our amygdala has overpowered our prefrontal cortex, making it almost impossible for us to act skillfully. And so what we really need to do is recognize the warning sign. And the warning signs are what, if we can recognize the warning signs, we can take care of it before they overwhelm us. And the warning signs are really the physical sensations in our body. And that's why we started the open meditation with paying attention to the sensations within our body. Most emotions cause some kind of a physical sensation. And, for example, with fear, we might have a tightening of the chest. With anger, we have more rapid breathing. With a desire to cling to something good, we might also feel the contraction in our chest, like we're trying to hold on to it. And if we recognize these warning signs, in order to do so, we need to slow down and pay attention to what's happening in our body at the present moment. And that's a skill that we develop through meditation. When we meditate, we turn down the volume on our mental chatter. And when thoughts come up, we can see what emotions they elicit and notice the physical sensations that come up with that emotion. And it's much easier to learn this skill when you're at ease in meditation than when you're at the height of an emotion. So you don't have to be in formal sitting meditation in order to practice this skill. You might take a moment throughout the day to pay attention to what are you thinking and discern what emotion that thought has elicited and become aware of the physical sensations that are present. Now, obviously, it's not something you're going to remember to do all the time, so you might want to set some cues of when you're going to do it, when you're going to take a moment to practice, like before you get out of bed in the morning. How am I feeling? Or maybe each time you go to walk upstairs, stop and say, how am I feeling? What am I thinking? What emotion do I have? And what are the physical sensations? Or maybe you do it each time you go to the bathroom. But recognizing what's coming up is key. And once we recognize it, we have to acknowledge it. And acknowledging it is a lot more difficult, at least it is for me. I would much rather brush anything unpleasant under the carpet But then it keeps growing until I can no longer ignore it. So when I try to resist unpleasant things, I unconsciously spend a lot of energy trying to keep them hidden. And Emily Lindsay says, when people accept difficult experiences, like stress, it allows the experience to run their course and dissipate, while resisting them only makes them stronger. And accepting stress helps people to stop focusing only on what's wrong and to notice other feelings, sensations, and thoughts occurring at the same time, enabling them to see the bigger picture. So acknowledging just means letting the thoughts, the emotions, the feelings, or the sensations that you've recognized simply be there without trying to fix or avoid anything. Just agreeing that they're there, not liking them, not acquiescing to your fate. But it's just really seeing what is my internal response to external stimuli. That's all acknowledging is about. And once we can say, yes, it's there, then we can look deeper and try to understand it. A lot of times when we try and change bad habits, we think all we need is self-control. But self-control is a myth. What works is understanding how our minds work so that we can work with them. I've told you the story of how years I tried to use self-control to give up Diet Pepsi and it just didn't work. And when I learned about understanding, that helped. Understanding requires calling on your desire to know the truth. It's turning off the light of our thoughts so we can see what's really here, the feelings and the sensations in our body. You're not looking to understand how or why this happened to you. You're just exploring how maybe what you believe impacts how you relate to yourself and others, or how it relates to your creativity, might inhibit your creativity. It might inhibit your ability to experience joy or your ability to respond instead of react. And if you understand, then you can see what you're really longing for most in the present moment. What is it you really need? Is it attention, belonging, acceptance, just being seen? So as my Diet Pepsi habit, my thoughts said I deserved a Diet Pepsi as a treat, because I had worked hard and Diet Pepsi was delicious. And I believed those thoughts. But when I paid attention to the sensations, I realized that only the first couple of sips tasted good. After the first couple of sips, I either didn't bother to taste it, or it was okay, or maybe it really wasn't even so great after a while. And then looking underneath my thoughts for the feeling, turning the light off on my thoughts, I realized I was associating Diet Pepsi with belonging. Because in my family, I was one of the little kids, and I had to go to bed, and then the big kids got to have POP. So I had to turn the light off on my thoughts and see what's really happening. And what was really happening was that instead of helping me to belong, it actually was a hindrance for me belonging. Because after drinking a Diet Pepsi, I had to run out of a meeting and go to the bathroom rather than standing around chit-chatting with my colleagues. So understanding really makes the difference. As I started watching and paying attention to every sensation while I was drinking the Diet Pepsi, and thinking about what it was supposed to be doing for me, I was able to back off long enough to reflect on the actual rewards. And I could see that this Diet Pepsi habit was not a behavior that was orienting me toward happiness. It really oriented me toward stress. And That's really key to understanding, is seeing what's really happening. A lot of times we think something is a reward, but it's not really. How many times have you felt self-righteous anger and it feels so good in the moment? But feeling so good in the moment doesn't mean that it's a good thing, because it actually isn't, and it usually makes us do something not very skillful, so it doesn't serve us well. But it feels really good in the short run. You know, the same thing if we're craving chocolate and we keep eating chocolate after chocolate after chocolate, in the very short run, it feels good. But in the longer run, we may have an upset stomach, we feel bloated, we get on the scale the next day, and it really hasn't served us. So the more clearly we see the unwanted result arising from a repeated behavior, the more disenchanted we become, and the less we'll naturally be drawn to move toward that behavior. Why? Because the reward of letting go and simply being feels better than the dis-ease, according to Justin Brewer. So to navigate around obstacles, we're going to meet challenges. And we know that our natural reaction is either to hastily retreat or bulldoze through. But let's look at ways that we can meet obstacles with a kind curiosity instead of this resistance that we have. So we'll look at each of the challenges we discussed last time: desire, craving, aversion, anger, restlessness, worry, sloth, torpor, doubt, and delusion. And using the three steps of recognize, acknowledge, and understand, we can recollect ourselves and be better equipped to make a skillful response. So with desire and clinging, there's nothing wrong with wanting nice things. It's when we cling tightly to them that we get the rope burn, that we suffer. What we want to recognize is, what need is the desire actually filling? The desire for food, when you're hungry, can satisfy your hunger. The craving for food when you're not hungry is filling another need. And this need can never be met by food, although it may appear like it does in the short run. So when we're upset and we have a piece of chocolate, we have just a little bit of a good feeling while we're eating that chocolate. But it doesn't really take care of the need that we really had, because we didn't really have a need for chocolate. The biggest problem with desire is that the fulfillment only feels good for a very short time. And then our mind starts asking, what's next? As soon as one desire is fulfilled, another one pops up. And we're always unsatisfied because there's always something more we need. As soon as I get this job, as soon as I get this house, as soon as this happens, as soon as that happens. And the practice to counteract this is to simply define, what is enough? What's enough in your life? What's enough money? What's enough things in your house? What's enough friends? What's enough? What would it look like if you had enough money, enough clothes, enough kitchen gadgets, enough recognition, and enough of whatever else it is that you crave? So stopping to take the time and think through what really would be enough is going to help to avert you from the cravings and help you see what's going on. With aversion and anger, they come from disliking our experience. Often anger's justified, but we make the offense bigger by adding on layers of stories that we take very personally. For me, I look at whether I can change the experience. And if I can't, I have to look inside to see what I can change in myself so I'm not triggered so strongly. Am I telling myself the story that they did it on purpose just to hurt me, or what belief do I have underneath my anger? Is it fear, shame, or sadness? Because usually that's what's underneath the anger. Remember, if you just try and push the unpleasant experience aside, everything's okay. It will persist, and not only will it persist, it's going to color your mood and your actions. Sometimes something negative happens in the morning, and that whole day you don't see the beautiful flowers, you think the sky is too gray, and it colors everything. Nothing's right with the world. So with aversion, we want to see what is it that's really the problem and recognize it, acknowledge it, and understand it so we can move past it and not try and just push it away. When we're caught up in restlessness and worry, it's easy to bounce around. Now, I'm sure you guys have never done this, but I spent a lifetime bouncing around from one thing to another, from a place of hope to a place of fear, always looking for something new or better. You know, I went from one job to another. I bounced from one activity to another. Because we have this fear of missing out, and that encourages us to be so focused externally, always looking for the next thing. Thus, we fill our lives with more things, more experiences, and more to-dos. And we become so busy we don't have time to feel whatever it is that we really didn't want to feel. Because restlessness and worry are usually just covering up something we don't want to feel. So the antidote for restlessness and worry, even though you have all this energy, is to slow down and actually to single task. When we multitask, our brain's neurons jump over the pleasure centers that activate when we single task. So research has shown when you're doing two things at once, you're not getting pleasure from either thing. But if you do each of them one at a time, you do get pleasure from each of them. Your pleasure center would light up. Slowing down is not very easy to do. I've been practicing eating meditation at breakfast for a couple of months now, maybe 3 months now, almost every day. And while I'm not reading, listening, or talking while I'm eating, my mind is still thinking. But the more I practice, the more my mind really does stay with the taste and the texture of my food. And that I've seen kind of has dribbled over to my lunch and my dinner where I'm paying more attention to what I eat. And I feel more satisfied after breakfast. I don't get hungry right away after breakfast like I used to because I didn't really even notice myself eating the breakfast. So I have to keep reminding myself that I have time and that I deserve to take the time to slow down and simply enjoy my meal. And that gets rid of a lot of restlessness of worrying about what can I get to the next thing. Sloth and torpor is the physical or mental sluggishness we feel when we're bored or we have really low energy. And sometimes it comes from the exhaustion of trying to repress something that we don't like, you know, a feeling that we don't want to feel. Other times it comes when you lack the mental stimulation that you're used to. I can tell you my first full day on a retreat, I can barely keep my eyes open. Sloth and torpor take over. Because all of a sudden everything's quiet, I'm not getting the stimulation I'm used to. And your mind becomes kind of cloudy and unworkable. And the only way to get past sloth and torpor is, if it's an aversion, to process the aversion that you've been trying to repress. And if that's not the case, maybe take some physical movement, because that helps our mind get going and energizes us a little so we can get past the sloth and torpor. But it's really a difficult thing to do. And then there's doubt, which is the state of uncertainty. And it's not just uncertainty, it's the wavering and the indecision that we're going back and forth and we can't even decide. So we're paralyzed by trying to make a decision of what to do. It's like coming to a crossroads and not knowing which way to turn. And really the antidote to doubt is to take a small step in any direction, even if you're not sure which direction you should go. You might stop before you move in any direction and project 6 months into the future to say, if I did this action, how would I feel? And if that still doesn't tell you the answer, just take the small step, because if it's the wrong direction, you're going to know and you'll discover that it's the wrong direction and then you start over. With all of these, you can always have a do-over. Delusion is not seeing reality as it is. And that's one of the reasons we're so polarized. Because what I see as reality and what my friend Rick sees as reality are two totally different things. Because what we see and what we hear is distorted by our beliefs and our biases. Other times we have selective perception. We see what we want to see and listen to what we want to hear. And the biggest thing with delusion is that we think we can control things that we can't control. Or we think that our unpleasant or our pleasant experiences are going to last forever. So if it's pleasant, we cling to it because we want it to last forever. If it's unpleasant, we're afraid to face it because we're afraid it's going to last forever. And when we're delusional, we're trying to change things from rough and tangled, the way the world really is, to something that's really steady or buoyant. And that's not what life really is. So all you need to do with delusions is to see them. To get rid of the darkness, you just flip on the light switch. You don't have to get rid of the darkness. You'll know it's a delusion because your mind is going to react, often with greed or with aversion. And when you peel off the delusional layers, that's where you'll find the goodness and the love that's inside of you, that's always there. So being your authentic self means you're using all your skills, your talents, your wisdom, and doing things that are uniquely you. Your actions arise from who you are and not what you believe you're supposed to do. So let's take a moment to contemplate an obstacle that you'd like to focus on. Each of us have one obstacle that probably comes up more often than the other. For me, it's desire. Don't pick the most difficult one. It'll be easier to deal with a difficult one once you've had some practice with the more manageable changes. And so let's just take a moment to close your eyes and sit quietly and think about which hooks you most often. Is it desire and craving? Aversion, anger? Restlessness and worry? Sloth and torpor, doubt, and included in doubt is that doubt, I'm not good enough, or delusion. As you think about it, let's make a commitment to ourselves that between now and our next meeting, which will not be until May 10th, that you're going to focus on paying attention to that obstacle and noticing when it arises, what physical sensations you have when it arises, what stories you're telling yourself when it arises, and what beliefs you have. When we try to live our lives as our authentic selves, we're going to fail many times. This is not a, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be successful. If we want to be authentic, we need to continually make course corrections, paying attention to both the direction we're going and the speed. Because if we're trying to go too fast, we're probably trying to bypass something. So by listening to our bodies and slowing down our mental chatter, we can see when we're veering off course. When we encounter obstacles, we will rise to the challenge. The more we practice being in the present moment and seeing below our thoughts to reality, the more resilient and authentic we'll become. I'd like to end with a poem. And the poem is called "There's a Hole in My Sidewalk, The Romance of Self-Discovery." And it's by Portia Nelson. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes me a long time to get out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. I walk down another street. And that's really the process that we're going to be going through, is walking down that street and not seeing it, and then seeing it but doing it anyway, and eventually walking down another street.